Good evening.
Love Talk Radio.
Wise Latina Network. Gives you a feeling of power.
Good evening. Welcome to the Two Wise Latinas, part of the Wise Latina Network. We are here to empower and inspire the women of the Latino community with practical tools for a successful life. I am Sandra Boissier, and my co-host this evening, Cynthia Reese, is with us. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. Hello.
We are very excited and honored this evening because we have Anaya Fogue with us. Hi, Anaya. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
We're going to jump right in because we want to maximize our time with you. Anaya Bogue is not only a self-esteem expert, but she's also an author, an educator, and mother of two wonderful young ladies. So, Anaya, tell us how you found your journey into the arena of self-esteem.
Well, first and foremost, I always tell people that I am a recovering adolescent girl. So I was introduced very early on to a shift from being a 9-year-old, going on 10-year-old, fourth grader who felt unstoppable to just a few short years later being a 16-year-old in a what started as an emotionally and verbally abusive relationship and eventually became a physically abusive relationship. And when I came out of that, I just thought, how did this happen? And nobody ever could have told that 9-year-old girl that this would be her future. And I became really determined at that point to understand not only for my own healing, but for the other girls and women that I encountered in my everyday life who had such similar experiences. And so began my journey to really understand that shift in self-esteem and how it was impacting the lives of girls and women.
Well, Anaya, this is Cynthia. So one thing I just wanted to do for our listeners is ask your self-esteem expert, what is self-esteem?
It's a great question because self-esteem, the word is actually thrown around a lot and sometimes it's used synonymous with the word confidence, which is certainly a piece of it. But self-esteem, certainly the way that I use the word, is really synonymous with self-value. So how we value ourselves, how we see our value in the world, which of course is also connected to how we see others valuing us, right? None of us live in a bubble. So there's that other piece to it. And wrapped up in that are things like our sense of personal agency. So do we feel that we have the ability to be actors on our own behalf, authors of our own paths in the world? So it's really a loaded word that speaks to sort of our core sense of being and value. And when it's compromised, it affects just about every aspect of our lives.
True. Very true. Okay, this is Sandra speaking now. Our next question is, self-esteem is a building block to identity, let's say, right? So how do we create our self-esteem?
Well, I think that self-esteem is something that is really created in the dynamic interaction with the world. So again, you know, when you see little girls come into the world, most of them are really quite self-contained. They don't sit around questioning, at least not initially, what's wrong with them, what they look like constantly, so on and so forth. They have a sense of wholeness, I would say. And then as time goes on and they're exposed to messages that are really more prevalent in our society than I think we even realize, messages of female inferiority, messages that say that girls and women are, in a variety of ways, less valued, less valuable than boys and men in our society, that slowly starts to chip away at their self-esteem. And of course, you know, the research that I found several years ago when I was in grad school was that the average girl's self-esteem peaks at the age of 9 and then plummets, which of course is devastating to think about. And I think it's one of the errors that we make as parents is thinking that it's going to be okay for longer. Like, we're not going to see that crash until they're 13 or 14 or 15. And in truth, it is so taken hold by that time in their lives that we're at that point doing damage control instead of protecting them and building sort of a resilient armor to the messages that will break down most girls.
And how does this compare with a boy's self-esteem?
Well, okay, so certainly, I mean, self-esteem is something that, you know, boys also, you know, grapple with to some degree. The big difference is that if you look at girls and boys and adolescence is really a pivotal time in any person's development, right? So what happens to us in adolescence is as we start going through puberty, another really important process begins, which is called individuation. And it's really the becoming consciously aware of ourselves as an individual, separate of our parents. And the messages, if you look at the messages that girls receive versus the messages that boys receive in what is a patriarchal society, patriarchal meaning that the most institutions, most decision-making, most power lies in the hands of men, everything from naming our babies and taking our husband's name to sitting in positions of power. We've still never had a woman in the Oval Office, for example. That under patriarchy, there are many, many, many more messages that say that boys and men are valued. So as they are finding their individual identity in the world, the messages that they receive is that actually because they're male, they're really valued. They have personal agency. They hold a sense of power. They can be leaders and decision makers and are trusted as such, whereas girls receive the opposite messages and therefore their self-esteem is broken down in ways that boys just is not.
But things are changing. Yeah, things are changing, and hopefully we're going to have a woman in the Oval Office soon. So because things are changing, or are the women's self-esteem changing along with that?
Well, I think it's going to take time. I certainly think it's a tremendously exciting time to be a girl and to be a woman on this planet, because I feel like there is this sort of collective awakening, you know, as we see research, for example, of, let's just say, in developing nations, that when we go in and we help girls help them to see themselves as valuable, help them believe and help their families believe that the answer is not just to marry them off when they're 12 or they're 15 or whatever, but in fact, when we educate them, the entire community benefits by their ability to become educated and what they bring back to the community. So that has now sort of created this ripple effect where we're seeing that because girls become mothers who then shape the future generations, that when we do right by girls, there is this deep impact on our society as a whole. And so I do think it's really hopeful. I do think it's hopeful that we've got, you know, although we are far behind many countries in the world, that the United States currently has more women in office than has ever been the case historically. You know, there are definitely signs that we're moving in the right direction. I always like to say that it's important to have a balance between celebrating our progress but not allowing that to sort of cloud the reality and stop. I'm always concerned that people are going to stop being as diligent as we need to be if they have a false sense of security and false sense of our progress.
Exactly. Here's what I was thinking. I was kind of still back at how boys get the fantastic messages of leadership and trust, and women are going to have to, you know, we as a general population have to prove our trust and prove ourselves over and over again. And I do agree that we are in a different time. And then, of course, as Latinas, we're in a very different time, right?
Sure.
But much like you're saying, we've been waiting and holding back for this moment, you know, for quite some time. So I'm absolutely, you know, I love the fact that we're moving forward, but to me, we're not moving forward fast enough. And then the fact that I have two daughters also proves to me that we're not moving forward fast enough, right? But I do see a big difference in my generation and my daughters. So something major has happened between my generation and my daughters. And you have daughters, too, so I'm sure you see that.
Yep.
So my question...
Definitely.
Yeah, right? So they're very powerful. And I felt that when both of them were born, they were like you were saying, you know, they were full-formed beings, right? Now, the difference between us and them is that they didn't really take on as much of those identities that were thrown at them for being less than. So, for example, my 16-year-old daughter doesn't have that stigma of she's got to prove herself at all, and she doesn't have that comparison thing of like, oh, I'm a woman, so I can't be a president. That doesn't exist in her psyche at all. So it's very exciting for that generation, in my opinion, right?
It is.
But yeah.
I would just say that, and again, it's not, hope is really, really important, right? Because if we're not hopeful, if we don't spend a significant amount of time really focusing on what is the progress that we've made that becomes then the foundation for continued progress, that's essential. At the same time, you know, if you look at the research that's out there, something like upwards of 74% of girls will say that they feel pressured to please everyone. We see that in third grade, about the same number of girls and boys say that they want to be president. And by the time those same kids are 14 and 15, there's a huge gap between the number of boys that say they want to be president and the number of girls. So we still have a lot of work to do, but I think, to your point, that when we see in our daughters, in a girl that we encounter, you know, she's our niece, she's our neighbor, whatever, where we see this spark of potential, it gives us hope that we really need to, you know, we need to grab onto that and say, okay, now we see what's possible. Let's show girls even more of this. Let's show them the Malalas of the world so that they understand
exactly
what they are capable of.
So this is Cynthia. So I was also like you in a physically abusive relationship, in a marriage, actually. And by the time I got divorced, my self-esteem was shot. So I know it took a lot of work for me to build back my self-esteem and my self-value. So why don't you give us your thoughts about what women can do to build their self-esteem and their self-image and their self-value?
Sure. First and foremost, I think it's really, really important to understand as women that there was a time for a much longer period of time than we have experienced for the last 3,000 or 4,000 years when cultures all over the world had a deep reverence for women. I mean, I often think of it as sort of the most absurd joke that's ever been played on humanity, that women have been convinced, and men for that matter have been convinced, that women are inferior. And it's not about making an argument for who's better, but it's absurd when you think about our capacity to grow new life in our bodies if we choose, to nurse those babies from our bodies, to bleed for days at a time and not die, which, in fact, that cycle allows for the continuation of our species. It's like there was a time in our ancient history where those realities of being female were absolutely revered. Women were seen as the closest thing to the Creator because of our capacity to create new life. So the fact that we've moved so far away from that is absurd. The good news is that when women start to learn about that historic reality, we start to have a shift in the way that we think. And instead of feeling like we have to, you know, create the wheel or recreate the wheel, start from scratch, you know, break brand new paths, instead it starts to feel like we just need to find our way home. We need to think again about this incredible power that we carry inside of ourselves just by virtue of being female. And that same creative capacity we have for creating babies also lends itself to creating powerful communities, to creating, you know, great art, great wisdom in the world. All of these things hold such value. And I think by getting to the root of what broke us down in the first place, then the healing can begin.
So it's not necessarily learning something new. It's breaking down that negativity and those barriers, if I heard you correctly.
It is. It's about, you know, really understanding that we have been in a different state before and we can find our way back. And secondarily, understanding, you know, it's almost like if somebody told you tomorrow that you had cancer, you know, you could spend all day telling yourself, okay, well, I just need to feel good. I just need to imagine that the cancer is going to disappear, and not to belittle the power of mindfulness, because I believe in that. But by the same token, we would need to identify exactly where the cancer exists so that we can rip it out and make it go away for a long time. My work is really about helping women understand and helping parents understand what is the root, what are the key messages that are breaking down girls' and women's self-esteem in the first place, so that we can begin to change those messages and the traditions and a variety of other things that really reinforce them so that we can create lasting change.
Anaya, I have a question that's a little bit of a, you know, side question. I want your opinion. I want your perspective on the issue of bulimia and anorexia in our society. It's something that, as you're speaking, has just come up very strongly. I'm wondering what your opinion is on that.
I'm not entirely certain. Are you asking me why do I think that there's such high incidence of bulimia and anorexia in our society?
Right. Exactly. It's like an epidemic going on.
It is. There's a couple of, I think, key factors. First and foremost, we as human beings have a natural inclination to want to feel a sense of power in our lives, on our own path. So what we know, what the research tells us over and over and over again, is that at the heart of eating disorders is the opportunity where one feels powerless in every aspect of their life to gain a sense of power and control. I may not be able to control anything else in my life, but what I can control is what I do and do not put in my body. So the more powerless that girls and women feel, the more likely they are to develop an eating disorder. On top of that, of course, is that when you live in a society that creates a standard of beauty, right, while simultaneously sending the message that a girl or woman's value is primarily rooted in her appearance, it's sort of a no-brainer that girls and women are going to do whatever it takes, whether it is limiting what they put in their body, even if it means compromising their health, going under the knife for a variety of different cosmetic procedures, because, again, what we want is to be accepted. We want to be desirable within our tribe, and we want to have access to a sense of power. And in our society, when we say that men hold most of the power, which is still primarily the case, women come to learn that the only way that they can access that power is through men, in their relationship to men, and by being desirable to men. So I think those are the two pieces of the puzzle in terms of why it is so epidemic.
Right. So, thank you for that.
So many of the Latinas are moms, and I know you wrote a book, 9 Ways We're Screwing Up Our Girls, and How We Can
Stop.
So tell me a little bit about that.
So, the book really came out of, I've had a private practice for a number of years now, and I work almost exclusively with girls and women, and I started working exclusively with girls, and then the moms sort of came on board in a really organic way. That being that, you know, the moms, after I'd have a session with the daughter, would say, you know, what can I do? I'm really starting to see differences. What can I do to support your work? And as the rapport grew, they would start to share with me how the behaviors they were seeing in their daughter were actually bringing to the surface a lot of their own adolescent wounds. So I would frequently end up counseling simultaneously both the daughter in helping her to either keep her self-esteem intact or repair the damage that had been done, and then simultaneously working with the mom to repair her self-esteem, because, of course, as an example, if mom is suffering with low self-esteem and is standing in front of a mirror, speaking poorly of her physical body or constantly deferring to her husband to make decisions because she doesn't feel like she's capable of making wise, sound decisions. There's a variety of examples. Then she's just perpetuating. She's passing on the same views that she has to her daughter, and it will directly impact the way that her daughter sees herself. So I wrote 9 ways because I found myself saying the same things over and over again, and I thought the best way that I can help make a lasting impact is to help parents primarily, but also women, certainly also, teachers and coaches and people that work with girls and care about girls, but really help them understand what it is that we're doing, usually inadvertently, to damage girls' self-esteem and how much different the world would be if we could just become aware of it and start doing things a little bit differently when we interact with them.
Brilliant. So I have a question. I mean, there's so much to ask you, and I'm trying to hold back, okay? But it's very exciting because these are all these self-esteem. You're giving us some very powerful self-esteem golden nuggets here. Now, I wanted to ask you, because as Latinas, from the Latina perspective, I was raised, very, very strictly to respect my father, and he was the one who made all the decisions, just like, you said. Now, because as women, we were trained, so to speak, to defer to the patriarchal psyche, which,
yep.
We're talking a deeper level here,
Deep programming.
It's a little bit
deep programming, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for that, because it's hard to shake this one off, trust me.
Yes.
So my question is, we are constantly sacrificing the female psyche to the patriarchal system that we're basically trained, ingrained into. So as a woman today, and because, of course, my 2 daughters, right, and my daughter has a Latino father, what is the best, most vital healing advice you can give the Latinas who are, still being trained in this way to sacrifice to the patriarchal psyche?
Whew, okay. That's a big question. It's a big question. And I think that, first of all, I want to say that although I think it's probably even more intense for Latina women because, the patriarchal way of being, traditions, just day-to-day interactions is more potent in the Latino community than it is in others. I want to acknowledge that. Again, I'm going to say the same thing. I find it interesting. You said a lot of your listeners as Latina women, because it's really valued, right, to become a mother. And I would say that the best place to start is to really ponder for a moment how much power you hold in your capacity to have given life, in your capacity to raise the next generation. If ever there was an example of the hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world, I want to tell everybody to put that on their fridge. And tracing back and finding the shortcomings, even the dangers in continuing to invest in, to subscribe to perpetuate a paradigm that places men over women. And it's not to say that we're going to say, well, what we need to do instead is put women over men. What we're talking about is creating partnership, that men bring valuable qualities to the table. So do women. And if men's qualities and ways of being are overshadowing what women have to bring to the table, we are collectively going to function at a deficit. So deprogramming is not easy, but getting to the root of it and starting to say, okay, well, where did this belief come from? Does that make sense for me? Where does this belief come from? Does that make sense to me? Is that the way that I want my children to see the world? And when the answers start to become no, then it means it's time as a thinking, capable human being with more personal agency than we probably realize as women that we have, to start making those changes and realizing that as mothers, the change that we can make via our children is really powerful and can take hold very quickly, like within a generation, if we decide that's what we want to do.
So you've touched upon it a little bit,
but
let us talk a little bit more about how you can reclaim your self-esteem.
Well, you know, first of all, it again, I think it's about understanding where it was lost, which is why my book is as much for women, whether you have children or not, whether you have girls or not, as it is for mothers of girls. The book is really designed to bring to conscious awareness what are the things that we do in day-to-day life. What are the things, and there's some tough ones, right? Like, how do our religious traditions and belief systems and practices feed this idea of male superiority? And where did that come from? And who decided that that was the way that things should be interpreted? So there's some really tough things to say, but it really means peeling back the layers and getting, you know, to the heart of it. Tracing back as you read this book that is sort of focusing on girls and saying, okay, so what if I apply this to myself as a girl? If I think back to my adolescence, if I think back even earlier than that, what were the messages that I received? And now, as an adult, conscious, thinking human being who is capable of being the author of my own path, how can I decide what I keep for me? And it really has to be an almost methodical, highly intellectual, but also deeply spiritual process of peeling back layers of programming and information that is sort of, you know, glommed onto us and become part of our being, and meticulously, slowly peeling those back. Does that make sense?
Brilliant. It totally makes sense. It's discernment, but initially it's curiosity. It's curiosity.
Absolutely.
That opens that door, or that, you know, that window into seeing that it, what you're living is actually not true and might even be irrelevant to who you are today, you know? So
exactly.
Wonderful.
And in fact, I think
wonderful.
We get lots
so
of
powerful.
Cues. I think we get lots of cues as women. Like, I love that you said curiosity. And I think what mm-hmm. often precedes the curiosity is a deep feeling of sadness. Something in our body, sometimes it's even physical ailment, right? Because this is how, you know, physical disease is often a manifestation of, you know, something that is, you know, deeply spiritual or deeply emotional or, you know, psychological that just doesn't sit well with us, is not in line with our true capacity as human beings. And so when I have a woman that comes into my office and she is, showing signs of depression, you know, I immediately dive in to trying to figure out the root of that. And of course, anyone who
right.
feels like I'm less than, every time I look around, every time I defer my ability to make a wise decision on behalf of myself or my children, and I just let my husband make it, for example,
mm-hmm.
something doesn't feel right inside of me. And I think the other thing is, too, that we have to give men enough credit that, and particularly when they have daughters, which is a game changer, right, that I believe that although men are also deeply programmed, that I have sat down with men, and when I say to them sort of like using the Socratic method, asking questions, do you want your daughter to be an independent, strong, resilient young woman? I mean, 9 times out of 10, I mean, without hesitation, they'll say absolutely. And at that point,
of
I can say, okay, so here's how we're going to get her there. But you making all the decisions.
You're not going to believe this. We're at the end of our show. I can't believe
it. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I'm so sorry. We should talk again sometime.
So why don't you tell the listeners how they can reach you?
Sure. Okay, so you can find me. My website is aneabogue.com, aneabogue.com. There's tons of information about working with me individually, workshops that we offer for both girls and women. You can purchase my book through Amazon and in some bookstores. And just there's wonderful resources there in a variety of forms that will be helpful to anyone who's interested.
Anaya, I love your passion. I am so inspired by what you're saying. I'm so inspired as a woman listening to you. So thank you. Thank you so much for you brought us a lot of energy and a lot of passion. I'm really grateful that you came on the show. We're going to have you back because we want to continue this conversation. This is awesome.
I would love that. I would love that.
Awesome.
And thank you. I'm happy to help in any way that I can.
And thank you for being part of the collective awakening. That's so exciting.
It is exciting. It's an exciting time.
Thank
well,
you
usual,
and good night.
As usual, Two's Wise Latinas, you can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, and we have our YouTube channel.
Till next week. Thank you.
Bye.